Today I have a tough task of presenting something presentable, which is a sequel to what was last time, which is usually much more difficult. So, and unfortunately my talk is not very well structured, so I have some things to say about the supersymmetric gauge theories, and some things to say about the string theory aspects of a pure spinner superstring. And somewhere deep in my mind, these things are related, but I will try to explain why they show up together. But unfortunately, there will be no direct mathematical statement which will connect this. So, as soon as Nathan introduced the pure spinner formalism, many of us were wondering whether this is something new or we were actually working on similar topics for a long time before that. And one aspect of the pure spinner superstring is that this is viewed as a bullshit sigma model. It's a sigma model with C equals central pair 0, which is suitable for the spring background. But most importantly, it's fermions. Have dimension 1, 0, so it contains the, if you like, a BC system of spin 1, 0, and also the bosons. And this is a matter content of which we typically encounter in topological strings. Let me remind you briefly what kind of topological strings we know. So we have an A type and a B type. Historically, these were the most studied things. Maybe 10 years ago, a new kind of topological string was emerged, which was suitable for describing the deformation quantization, which is neither A nor B. So some people call it C type. So the A type on the Volt sheet is described usually, can be described in the first order formalism, similar to what Edward talked about. So this is a typical Lagrangian. So here, X describes the map of your Volt sheet into some complex, well, actually, it has to be symplectic, and for simplicity here, I'm assuming it's actually a Kähler manifold. So it's a Kähler manifold, so X has dimension 0. P are the momenta, so Pi has dimension 1, 0. Pi bar has dimension 0, 1. And these are the fermions which with the same conformal dimensions as the bosons. So these are the one, zero, zero, one conformal dimensions. So you have this, the identical, as far as the conformal weights are concerned, system of bosons and fermions. The difference is that the axis, the bosons, the scalars, take values in some nonlinear space, while the fermions here cannot be really nonlinear, so they take values essentially in the tangent space to your target. So that's the topological A sigma model, and then it can be coupled to the two-dimensional topological gravity to define string amplitudes. In particular, so this is the Lagrangian. Now the mean model has a somewhat different look. It is typically written in the second order formalism. We're using some scalar metric, so it's the same general setup. You have some complex target, but the fermions now have different nature. So now here the fermions. This one first. So there is a fermion scalar which has an anti-homomorphic target space index. There is another scalar fermion which has a holomorphic lower index.
So here everything had an upper index for the scalars.
And then there is also one form which is pi, and it has an upper holomorphic index. So it has 1, 0, and 0, 1 pi. So you see here, the chirality of the Bolchev fermion is correlated with the target space holomorphicity in A model case. In the B model case, it's not so. So you have different, so you have both holomorphic vectors for the dimension 1 fermion, and for dimension 0, you have either 0, 1 or 1, 0 with respect to target space. And Lagrangian, roughly speaking, this form plus pi I plus terms with which involve connections which you don't want to write. So that's the B model Bolchev theory.
So in the A model, you already took the limit.
So this is the way the A model is actually used. This is, as was explained last time, this is actually an alpha prime going to zero limit of a more conventional sigma model. You can add the term plus a whole bunch of terms, which after you integrate the auxiliary fields out and throw in some topological terms like a B field, will make the bosonic part look like this one.
You do that in B model.
In the B model, this is not natural for some reason. Namely, the thing which is most important for the string construction is what we call the physical states. And so there is a BRC charge, or called supercharge. Scalar supercharge. Q, which in the A model case, let me write it as the current, the corresponding current. So it's the A model current for the supercharge is psi r. So this is the left part, and this is the right part of the supercharge. In the B model, what you have is something like the B model, in the A model, the coordinates, the target space coordinates transform both the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic one into the corresponding fermions. So these operators look like, so QA is like a ram on the target space. While the B model, the anti-holomorphic coordinate in target space transforms, while the holomorphic coordinate does not transform. And as far as the fermions are concerned, this fermion pi, which is a one form on the wall sheet, ensures that the all fluctuations of the holomorphic coordinate in BRC trivial. So pi
bullshit.
So we can write down the corresponding current. There's this term, and there is a so, as you can see, the natural thing. So, for the B models, the current of the BRST operator involves the derivatives of the bosonic field, in fact, of the holomorphic coordinates in target space. While for the A model, you can write everything in terms of the momenta only. Now, on shell, yes, on shell there would be derivatives. So if you have this term, there will be derivatives. But then when you, but then it will involve both xi and xi bar in target space. Well, here you only have xi.
Where is
on shell, PIW is GII bar, GW XI bar, while PI bar, W bar is PI bar, GW bar, XI bar, XI. So in the A model, you will have derivatives of both xi and xi bar. And for the B model, here we have only xi.
Only xi.
Yes. Only half of them. So it's always a half, but you see, here it's the half that it's you take half of the target space coordinates, but then you have both w and w bar derivatives. You have you have left and right moving parts in the Wolschi terms. But here in the A model, you also take a half, but you take a left moving part of the anti-holomorphic target space guys and right moving part of the holomorphic target space guys.
But in principle, nothing precludes us from doing the limit of the prime
number
zero,
adding some degree or something. No, because I don't know how to do it, because you see, it's precisely this fact that you have
you mean so that the QB is well defined?
Yes. So here QB has a well defined expression in terms of the fields of the theory. When you take, if you rewrite this in the second order formula, in the first order formula, it looks much more complicated.
In QA seems like a sum of two pieces. Are they separately conserved?
So if the target space is a Calabi-Yau, so that the theory is conformal, then they're separately conserved, so you can rewrite them. In fact, maybe Calabi-Yau is not so important. The fact that if a target space is a complex manifold, which is in general actually not necessary needed, then with the Rank differential on target space, you can split as a sum of d bar and del of d prime and d double prime operators. And these are the separate currents for the G bar and G operators in target space. So this guy looks like a G bar operator in target space. Of course, we know that there is a mirror symmetry which relates A and B models, and it is in this formalism that the mirror symmetry acts. So if you have some isometry which of X, you can actually integrate half of the X fields out in this formalism, then P, the corresponding P will become a derivative of a dual field, and then if you just substitute it here, you'll get precisely these formulas. Which is,
can you remind me again what first order versus second order means?
You see, the first order, in the first order, my boson, so I have explicitly the momenta for my bosonic fields. So my Lagrangian for the X fields is the first order derivative in X.
there is a term, there is a Hamiltonian term, which is P squared, but for most applications, and in particular if you're actually doing the calculations of the of correlation functions of Q-closed operators, this term is not important. And so then you can actually literally deal with the first order system where you have this scalar X and one forms P. There are some situations where actually you need this term to regularize certain expressions, and this is well known and its consequences for the mathematical formulation of these theories are well known. And these kind of things which we're trying to use with Nathan when we were trying to regularize his formulas. So it is, you see, what happens is that sometimes you have zero modes for this P field. So if you don't keep this term present, then, for example, if you work in a trivial instanton sector where your mode sheet can collapse to a point, just the map is trivial, just X goes to a point. And especially if your sigma is a higher genus Riemann surface, then when you integrate by parts, you will get the equation that PIW bar are the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic differentials on sigma, respectively. And on the genus G Riemann surface, you have G such holomorphic differentials. So this integral have bosonic zero modes, which are literally non-compact. And without this regularization term, it's just ill-defined. But as soon as you introduce this term, then you have a nice Gaussian suppression of the zero modes. And when you take into account the fermions, and especially the fermions which come from the supergravity sector, from the two-dimensional gravity sector, you'll get a non-trivial string measure, which leads to the so-called Hodge integrals, which I'm sure we'll hear about later in this program a lot. So this is something which is well understood mathematically, even mathematically. Now, so now let's look at the pure Skinner stream. So there, I'm talking about this the pure Skinner on the flat Gaussian space. So the whole sheet, Lagrangian. Unfortunately, I will have to switch to notations. A different community discussing this. So this is a fermion which is dimension zero. It's also a fermion which is dimension 1, 0. So this P is like to be compared with fermions pi, which I had on the up there. And this W, so lambda is a dimension zero field taking values in the curved space. This is the pure Skinner cone. So it's a cone, it's a complex, and as we argued last time, it's a C-star. Actually, it's a C-star bundle over compact quadrant orbit of the group SO10. So lambda is dimension zero, and W is like a P field PIW from up there has dimension 1, 0. So you can see, so if you just look from far away, this looks like half of the A model, because you see the bosons naturally have the first order action. This looks like some kind of a B model, because the bosons have a second order action. Now, the BRFC charge, the jewel of the construction, first looks like nothing we saw up there.
x, gamma, theta. And then there are corrections. Some coefficient 1/8. So you see, here we have the momentum for the fermion, something which we haven't seen here. Here, all the BRST operators involved only the scalar components of the fermions. But this part looks more like we saw, something like we saw here in the B model case, because what it looks like, the B model differential in the following sense. Well, it involves the derivatives of some bosons, and then you have a fermion, which is so you have a part of the 16. Remember, alpha runs from 1 to 16. This is a spinner of SO10. Chirality. So here, so this part you could rewrite as dzi. What are we supposed to put here? And some theta I, where when you're careful with, when you actually check the number of independent components, so zi would be the holomorphic coordinates on C5. So our S takes values on a 10-dimensional Euclidean space. We can identify it with a 5-dimensional complex plane, C5, in many different ways. And as I explained last time, the point on this space, on the pure spinner space, is precisely gives you a way to identify the 10-dimensional Minkowski's Euclidean space with the complex 5-dimensional space. In fact, the pure spinners parameterize the choice of the complex structure. So this is the base of the pure spinner space. That's a choice of a complex structure on R10. So for each value of lambda, you have such an identification. And so you can say that, well, and so out of 10 real independent components, actually what will happen, only 5 will enter this expression. And so those are the 5 which correspond to the holomorphic coordinates on C5. And then theta I, well, this is the lambda gamma theta combination. It's the non-trivial part of the of this premonic expression, which you get here. So it means that locally over this space, the Minkowski part of the pure spin operator looks like a B-model differential. But the choice of this B-model differential varies as you vary the point on the pure spinner space. So in a sense, at least for this part, what we see the family of the B-models, which are fibered over the pure spinner base. Now, what about this part? Well, this certainly doesn't look like what we have here, because here we have derivatives of the boson times a scalar fermion. Here we have the momentum of the boson times a scalar fermion. Well, here we have a momentum of the fermion times a scalar boson. So there are several ways to think about it. Currently, what I'm trying to think about it is that if you split, so here when you sit locally, when you sit on the pure spinner space, you can split your 16 fermions, thetas, into so this space has dimension 11. So you can split the 16 components of this ordinary spinner into 11, which are sort of tangent, which correspond to the tangent space, to the pure spinner space, and 5, which are sort of tangent to the or cotangent to the Minkowskian space, so which enter this part of the pure spinner differential. And then, so these 5, which come out nicely here, you don't touch. But for the 11, for the other 11, you do t-duality. But this time it's fermionic t-duality. So t-dualize 11. Out of 16 thetas. And so effectively what it will do, it will replace P by a derivative of the dual fermionic coordinate. And then after you integrate by parts, this will become theta, which looks like the B differential, B modal differential.
Is this 11 plus 5 splitting exist globally on the space?
I think so. Yeah. So it's not it exists as a fiber. It's a fiberwise splitting. So it's a t-duality which happens in different directions over different over different points. So.
Do they commute this 11 isometry, fermionic isometry?
I'm not talking about. So you see, fermionic isometries. So fermionic isometries. So they're just simple things that you can shift the theta by a constant and nothing changes. So it's.
I'm worried that they don't shift.
But I'm doing so. I'm just doing the field definition, if you like, or some manipulation with the path integral here, in order to rewrite this. Well, I don't know. I'm not sure how to ask the question whether the fermionic isometries commute here. Anyway, so this suggests that at the face value, the pure spinner different string is something new. But perhaps after some conventional t-duality transformation, it can be mapped to the B-model on what? So it will be a B-model on a complex manifold, which is a total space of the fiber of the vector bundle over the pure spinner space whose fiber is C5. And if this is sort of pushed through, then potentially we could get a new handle on the definition of string amplitudes, because after all, for the B model, we do have a definition of string amplitudes. And in particular, so in both A and B models, the stress energy tensor is a Q commutator with a certain field, and then the correlation functions of the G field define measures on the moduli space of Riemann surfaces, ordinary Riemann surfaces. But until this is done, we have to. And we don't have to, but one way to do is to don't perform any t-dualities, just work with this model as it is and try to find the corresponding field G. So this is the new chapter in this talk. What do we know about this field G? Sometimes called the B ghost. So this is the In topological string, the convention, the usually people use the notation G, because there G just comes from the superconformal algebra. Just like Q comes from the superconformal algebra, by a twist, the corresponding G operator does as well. And it has a similar expression to these ones. So for the A or B model, there's no difficulty in constructing this G field. For the new model, no. For the string applications, you construct, you compute the cross functions of Q closed observables only. Yes.
So you are
well, not quite. Sorry. I should say Q closed in the proper sense. So G field, as you can see, it's not Q closed, but it is Q closed up to a derivative on the moduli space of Riemann surfaces. If there is the Q variation of G is stress energy tensor, which is the variation with respect to the, if you like, a complex structure. And so once you couple the theory to gravity, it's not the Q which you are interested in, but it's Q extended by the derivative on the space of matrix. So what I'm now going to talk about is that this Q, which is a symmetry of the pure spinner string, turns out to be not quite the correct differential for the theory to be coupled to the topological gravity. So here something has to be done before coupling to the two-dimensional gravity.
So if it were just the different, the PRST, then it would be just topological string correlators.
Essentially, yes.
But then you have to do something.
You have to be careful with these words, because typically when you talk about topological string on a compact manifold, it has only a finite number of non-trivial observables.
Fine-dimensional
space of physical observables, which is of course not the case which is better not be the case for this thing, because this is believed to describe the superstring. Of course, one way to get around this point is that to say that, well, this is a non-compact space, and so the solution to Laplace equation there are many solutions to Laplace equation. But at a more serious level, in both A and B model, the fact that the bosons and fermions are nicely paired, well, for the A model, they're very nicely paired, means that as you work over the modular space of Riemann surfaces locally, and you do the path integral, the fermions and the fermionic and bosonic determinants precisely cancel. So you actually, the string measure doesn't get any contribution from the fluctuations from string oscillators. And this is essentially the reason why in the end both A and B model, well, especially the B model, if you construct a string field theory for this, it actually turns out to be just a field theory. It's a field theory which might be non-local somewhat, but it does not have the string growth of the number of excited states. So for the pure spinner, as you look at it, there is some danger of that kind, because the fact that the fermions and bosons are of dimension 1 and 0 means that when you define the string amplitudes point-wise, you'll get a cancellation between the bosonic and fermionic determinants. And so if it were one of the standard topological strings, it would most likely correspond to just a field theory and not a string field theory, which is not what we want. Well, maybe this is what we want ultimately, but probably not. So there better be some subtlety in this duality to the B model, which I
you are saying sketched. Subtlety is a definition of Q.
So one subtlety is a definition of Q, but probably this is not all.
Usually observables correspond to double homology classes. So if I look at this non-compact space, we're going to restrict attention to this compact orbit. Is there some nice numerology, like dimensional cohomology, using states and supergravity multiplets or anything like that?
So we'll get there. But first of all, when you say usually the states are Delbo differentials, you have to derive that. So here we're not. So as we look at this differential, we don't see any Delbo differentials. We don't see any room for Delbo differentials, because
this duality, the bosonic part is going to be the same, right?
Oh, you mean the Dolbo differential in this set?
After you perform the fermionic duality, the bosonic four is still the same, right? The bosonic.
Well, it's not obvious that I mean, you see, I just sketched this duality, but as you can see, thetas enter this differential in a big time, so in a profound way. And for the first two terms, it may be possible that you keep some thetas as thetas and the others you get from p's. But it's not obvious that all these nonlinear corrections, which are quite important to make this operator nilpotent, will still be given by local expressions, because duality is a non-local transformation on the Walsh.
Perhaps the thing that's different is this lambda. So lambda is fixed, I think, then you would just go to finite numbers.
Yes. And most likely. So I will try to explain this as well.
So do you end up with some operator whose linearization is E bar? Roughly.
Yes. Okay. But now I want to get the D bar on this pure spinner space. Just pure spinner space itself. And without doing the T-duality on fermions. You see, well, one point which I have to mention is that here you get D bar and D after you combine the left moving and right moving sectors in the topological strings which I described so far. Here I'm talking about the right moving sector only, or left moving sector only. So if you go to the textbooks on topological strings, they tell you that if you look at the chiral sector, you cannot distinguish the A model from B model. Well, the way I present it, you can, because one model naturally formulated using the first order formalism, the other model using the second order formalism. But if you go on shell and you look at the chiral sector, you cannot distinguish between these two models. So it's only after you glue the left with right together that you can say something. Or if you consider the D-brains, then the boundary conditions are sort of different for the A model and B model. But also not much. Well, anyway, so let me just discuss this big ghost for the pure spinner string without any duality. So we just look at this theory as it is. So we take its stress on the tensor. Now, the stress energy tensor for the pure spinner part is actually more complicated. Remember, so one way to deal with the pure spinner space is to solve the pure spinner constraint and parameterize, go to the local coordinates. You see, here, my Lagrangian was formulated in terms of local coordinates on target space, and it didn't bother us. So here, we can also do that. The local coordinates on this space, and one choice for these coordinates, you have a 16 component fermion lambda, which in some bases would look like that. So you have one component which I call e to the phi, 10 components which are e to the phi times uab, and 5 components which are quadratic in u. So this is some language in which the u5 symmetry is manifest, but the whole SO10 symmetry is not obvious. So this is the local coordinates. And notice that I denoted one of the components by e to the phi. In this way, I'm stressing the fact that it doesn't vanish. So remember, I argued last time that the proper target space for the Siegel model is the space of pure spinners with the point lambda equals to zero removed. And such a space can be covered by 16 coordinate patches
so that on U alpha, lambda alpha doesn't vanish. So that's the definition of U alpha. It's a space of pure spinners for which the component alpha does not vanish. Then you can, for, on this component, you can solve the constraints explicitly. That's what you will get. So on this component, I parameterize my lambda by e to the phi. So then what will happen, so then on this component of the pure spinner space, this part of the Bullshit Lagrangian describes the curved beta gamma system. So we have momenta for the U fields, we have a momentum for the phi field, so these are the dimension 1,0 fields. But as you recall, last time I explained that when you look at the standard stress energy tensor on the curve for the curved beta gamma system of that form, this is not invariant under the coordinate transformations. So if you go to gamma, from gamma to gamma tilde, the transformations of beta, because of the OP singularities, is much more, well, it's rather complicated. And when you take everything into account, it turns out that you'll get, pick up an anomalous term, which has to be compensated by the presence of the, in the original expression, a term which corresponds to a background charge. So to cut the long story short, here there is a correction to the stress energy tensor, which involves d to phi, some coefficient. This coefficient corresponds to the fact that in order to define the measure for the path integral on this space, you need to choose a holomorphic top degree form. And this top degree form, this coordinate is the coefficient N8. So that, this is what you use to define the measure on your fields. Now, so this is a stress energy tensor. Now, with this correction, this is a nice stress energy tensor. As you go from one patch to another patch on the modular space, on the pure spinner space, it will transform properly. So, it will be. So, the stress energy tensor, in the language of, if you are familiar with the language of chiral differential operators, this will be a global section of the sheaf of the chiral differential operators. But now, so Q is a symmetry of Lagrangian. Therefore, it is a symmetry of the stress energy tensor. So T is annihilated by Q. But the question, which is crucial for the construction of string amplitude, is whether T is actually Q exact. And at first, it looks impossible to make it Q exact because Q contains lambda alpha. So it has charge 1. So there is a symmetry, there is a star symmetry under which lambda alpha, lambdas has charge plus 1. W has charge minus 1. So here, the symmetry is essentially it is generated by the current, which is essentially the momentum for phi. Again, it has to be corrected to make it globally well defined. So there is something like that. So it's a, so Q has a charge plus 1 under the symmetry. While stress energy tensor
has charge zero, because it has well, here it's written in terms of manifestly neutral fields. So G has to have charge minus one. So something which will scale. So as you scale in the pure spinner space, G will have to scale with the negative weight. And if you look among the, if you look at the functions on this space, for example, they all have positive weights. If you look at some expressions which are, which correspond to the higher cohomology of this space, they start with weight minus 8. There's a gap. So it looks like it's impossible to find the global object on the pure spinner space which will act as a big ghost. However, Nathan and also the group of was it Tonin and Tonin and Tol, they actually found something without worrying about this fancy global local things. They just went ahead and just wrote a formula for G, which was of course sort of ill-defined. So in order to be well-defined, you had to work on one of the coordinate patches. So suppose you see it on the patch U alpha, where, remember, lambda alpha is non-zero. Then you can write an expression, which I will now write down, with explicit index alpha. So it will have precisely that lambda in the denominator, which is okay on U alpha, because there lambda alpha doesn't vanish. So there you can divide. And so G is the G is this Green-Schwarz constraint field. Okay, that's something which unfortunately I don't remember by heart. So J, I already told you what it was. J is the, it's a current which generates the scaling symmetry of the pure spinner space. L is the SO10 current.
And why don't you like to call this the Gauss symmetry, or is that the Sista symmetry, which gives charge?
Yes, so some it's called sometimes Gauss symmetry, but the point is that this is not the Gauss symmetry. It's not the full Gauss symmetry. The Gauss symmetry, as I will explain, you will see what the Gauss symmetry is. So for the moment, this is just a scaling symmetry of the pure spinner space. It used to be called Gauss symmetry, but in the light of what we know now, this is not the appropriate name, I think. The Gauss symmetry is the sum of the scaling. So the Gauss charge is the sum of the scaling charge and the Dolbeau charge, the degree of the form on this pure spinner space.
Will you explain this?
Yes, we'll explain in a second. Just very close. Okay, so this is some. So M. So this is M. So the SO10 current, it's has 45 components. Okay, so for each alpha, when you act with Q on this expression, you get stress energy tensor. Right. So you could say that, well, locally on the pure spinner space, when you work on a coordinate patch, you are in a nice situation where you can define the ghost, and so you can use this field G to define string amplitudes.
Sorry, does G J correspond to what you would be W alpha lambda alpha or not?
Yes. J. So this would be, so this is some global order, and then this is the current which is well defined on globally. This expression is a bit ambiguous. again depends on the. So you need to add some terms which involve the derivatives of the scalar field. So this, and so does this esoteric current. So this is naively, this is just that. But then there are some corrections which you need to add to make it well defined. It all has to do with the fact that when you work with the curved sigma model, when you go from one coordinate patch to another, the fields transform in an inhomogeneous way in general. They don't transform classically like just momenta and coordinates. Anyway, so. Now, so over each coordinate patch, we have this nice situation. But now, if we are sitting on the intersection, we now have two ways to write the stress energy tensor as a cube. As a cube commutator. So now, if we are going to define a string amplitude, which G shall we use? G alpha or G beta? And okay, suppose we use both, and what's the difference? Well, we know already from this expression that the difference G alpha minus G beta is actually is Q closed. But is it Q exact? If it's Q exact, then in some sense it doesn't matter what you use on the overlap, because the difference is a total derivative in the field space. So it turns out that indeed there is a field which is defined now on the intersection, which now has two indices, such that it measures the failure of G alphas to glue over the coordinate patches. So there is some expression also. Now it involves lambda alpha and lambda beta in denominator, which is okay because we're working on the intersection. And find these expressions you can find in Lincoln's lectures, and I'm sure he actually talked about them here. I just want to give you sort of the geometry of what's going on. Okay, so now on the overlaps, we're okay in the sense that we know that what we use here is not important after the Q commutators. And then, okay, so then we continue.
Are you worried about contributions to the boundary?
So this is, for the moment, this is just the space of pure spinners. So we, the question is how you set up your computation. So in the end, after all fluctuations are taken care of, you have an integral over just the zero modes, over the just this pure spinner space itself, and then you have to split the integration region somehow to say up to which point you use G alpha, up to which point you use G beta. But once you see the structure merging, it makes you suspicious that maybe you did not identify the Q operator properly. Because what we see here is we see the so-called descent equations. Namely, you see, let me call this expression delta of G alpha beta. So, whenever you have some space which you cover by some open regions, you can set up the so-called check homology complex. Check complex. So you have expressions call them psi alpha 1 alpha p, which are well defined on the intersection of u alpha 1 u alpha p. So these expressions can take values in various things. So it could be some algebras, some geometric things. So the general theory is you have a sheaf, and so every sheaf gives you the so-called local sections of these intersections. Then you can define differentials, which starting with expression which is defined on the p-fold intersection will give you something which will define on the p plus 1 intersection, which is constructed out of psi itself. So it's some alternating sum psi and correct me if I make some mistake. So you just skip the one of the indices. So this is defined on the p-fold intersection. And then you take an alternating sum. So this is a generalization of this difference operator. So if you started with G, which was defined on a single coordinate patch, delta G is defined on the intersection. This is just G alpha minus G beta. Then you can continue. You can consider. So let me call this G zero. So, as I just said, this is Q of something. Let me call this something G one. Now we can continue. So we can ask whether G1 is closed in the sense of this differential. So this is called check differential. So this is defined now on a triple intersection. So let's see. Maybe I want to put minus. I don't know. So so you take three such expressions. You make a sum with signs. And then you ask whether what you get is now Q-commutator or not. So the reason why this is so procedure sort of needed is that way you can actually set up the integration procedure or whatever you are going to do in a neat way. Namely, you first integrate G alpha over U alpha, G beta over U beta. But then you have an overlap where you sort of integrate it twice. So you want to compensate for that. And you subtract the integral over the intersection of the thing which is defined on the intersection. But then you overkilled on the triple intersection. So this is sort of called inclusion-exclusion kind of argument, which takes care of things in a nice way. So the miracle of the pure spinner space is that this procedure stops at a relatively relatively soon.
What?
If it stopped at 16, it wouldn't be a miracle. In fact, I think if it stopped at 11, it would not be a miracle because that's an 11-dimensional space. But actually, no, it stops at what, 3 or 4? It depends on how we count. So. So the stop, the last stop. Is G3, which is defined on the quadruple intersections. So this is where you essentially run out of tensors. I would have run out of tensors at the stage zero, but Nathan is very inventive. So. So this is just the Lorentz, the SO10 current, which shows up here, and then you have time to synchronize these indices.
information related to the anomaly in WDW, like anomaly we discussed last time.
Not that I'm aware of. If we didn't remove this, it is related in the sense that if we didn't remove the zero section, we would not be able to start. So what it means now, if you combine these things together, is that the stress energy tensor is actually, it's a Q plus delta commutator over certain inhomogeneous
G3 does not depend on how you choose alpha, beta, on alpha, beta, gamma.
It does depend. It does. You see, it's in the scalar indices.
Ah, no, wait. I don't think. You need to know.
Last two, what's it? It's gamma delta, sorry. Thank you. You fix the indices alpha, beta, gamma, delta.
But what happens on?
They have to be different, of course. These are all these intersections. You intersect different coordinate patches. You don't intersect the patch with the cells. In fact, you think of this as being anti-symmetric in these indices. So this is all these expressions are. Think of them as. It's clear. You see, you start with G. This was anti-symmetric in alpha beta.
You need gamma free.
Yes, you're right. So it should be P, so it should be R, S, and R and S. Right. You're right. Thank you. You see, I'm lost with that, guys. In fact, that's what my notes say. It's a miracle too. Say again.
Chef kills us. The chef differential of this is just zero.
Yeah, so the last guy is annihilated by Chuck. This is the usual. You would think that you could get something in degree 4, but you don't get. So what it means is that the proper meaning of the ghost charge is the sum of this charge, this Chuck charge, and the scaling symmetry. Scaling symmetry is just the Euler generated by the Euler vector field.
So you're just defining your fields to be part of the Chuck complex.
So this is what this formalism imposes on us that we have to use this Chuck differential or maybe any other presentation of this cohomology in order for this whole thing to work.
So the two charge is the sum.
Yes. So the reason why we didn't see this Chuck operator before was that, we thought that maybe we'll work with things which are sort of globally well defined on the pure spinor space. And in fact, if we just discuss the spectrum of the, let's say, the open string and the
delta square is zero.
Delta square is zero. Yeah. So the signs are such. Thank you. So the signs are precisely such that delta square is zero. And Q square is zero. And the fact that Q is defined. So this is an expression which is globally well defined. There is no choices made. So it means that delta and Q commute with each other. So in a sense, you have a double complex, but it's only the Q plus delta which is physical. Now, people who worked on these curved beta gamma systems, they sort of knew that you have to include higher check quachains into the game, because otherwise it's not clear how you make out of this essentially free systems which are defined on a local coordinate patch, how you make them sort of talk to each other. But for physicists, this is not something which we are familiar with, because we usually prefer to write an expression which will be well defined globally on target space, just that you use local coordinates to write it down explicitly, but you don't think that you need to define something things separately on different coordinate patches, and especially you don't think that you have to compensate by working on something which is defined on overlaps. So to help.
But higher p-form differentials right. in Lagrangians is a very familiar example of this, right? You can't do a b-field without, in any global context, without doing the same kind of descent.
Right, but this is not the way we usually do it. Because we use, instead of the check differential, we use Dolbeau differential, and we use d-bar things. So
here you don't want to have tensor coordinates. That's why you're forcing this.
We thought that we don't want them to because I mean we used to work with the if this is something like the A model, we used to think that well the right moving guys correspond to the holomorphic coordinates on target space, then the left moving guys would correspond to anti-holomorphic coordinates would correspond to the left moving guys. In fact, there is a way of getting the curvature gamma systems from zero to models. This is what Rutan studied. And there, gamma bar is there from the other sector, so it has different chirality. So what was suggested by Nathan, well, you just forget about what you used to know and just do what you need. You need anti-holomorphic coordinates, you introduce them in the same with the same chirality. So the so-called non-minimal formalism. This is just the realization of Dolbeau check equivalence. So here in Dolbeau formalism you work with d bar operator, but then you use expressions which involve gamma and gamma bar, and where they all define. And here you use expressions which are local, which only involve gammas that are locally defined. So this formalism is much more economical because you only involve holomorphic objects, except that maybe you have to work with 16 coordinate patches. In Dolbeau formalism, you introduce an infinite number of degrees of, you introduce extra fields. And extra fermions, but at the level of cohomology, they are precisely isomorphic. And so this is something which we are more familiar with. Okay. So these are some comments about cohomology formalism.
Now, gamma bars, which are still holomorphic.
So they are holomorphic on the wall sheet, but they are anti-holomorphic in target.
What about momenta? You have beta bars?
So the idea is that if you have a curved beta gamma system, you now supplement it with a curved beta gamma system, BC beta gamma system. So you introduce a quartet of fields, a couple of bosons, a couple of fermions, and so they're all right moving. Now you can write an expression. So what I used to call, for example, G. So G alpha is what you need in order to map one formula to another is so-called partition of unity. So you need to find the functions. So these will be the functions of gamma and gamma tilde. Gamma tilde stands for the anti-holomorphic coordinates, such that they sum up to one, and rho alpha is equal to zero outside U alpha. Then you can so if you had a collection, so if you had a check zero cochain, which was just a collection of expressions defined on individual coordinate patches, you can now take the sum over all coordinate patches, rho alpha times G alpha. This is now globally well defined, because where G alpha is not defined, then there rho alpha vanishes. But now it is not, it's no longer holomorphic. So because these guys involve gamma and gamma bar. And more generally, if you have an expression alpha, so if you have a pico chain, alpha 1, alpha 0, alpha p, then you send it to so it becomes a 0 p form. On X. And then the check differential becomes D-bar differential in this language. So in the literature of pure spinners, one usually uses something like rho alpha, something like lambda bar alpha lambda alpha. So here you don't sum over alphas. This is an expression which vanishes when lambda alpha vanishes, which is precisely outside U alpha. And the sum over all alphas of this is 1. This is what you can find in the literature. But you don't have to use this partition of unity. You can use anything to map things. Okay, I wanted to say a few words about the relation of Chern-Simons theories and supranormalist theories. So this is. So let me motivate first. Well, I tried to argue that there is some relation between the pure spinner Wolfschmidt formalism and the B-model Wolfschmidt formalism.
That's the non-minimal.
So I just explained, yeah, so that non-minimal formalism involves extra fields.
And the minimal formalism?
This is what this is just said. So it's. The minimal formalism doesn't use extra fields. It just uses, just tells you that you have to work not only with the globally defined things, but things which are defined on charts. And then the physical states have to be annihilated by the sum of the check differential and the QBRST differential. So, for example, if you only look at the states in the sector which are constructed out of lambdas.
So last week we heard a lecture about the problems of calculating amplitudes.
Yes, but I mean, the century of mathematical work showed that there is a complete equivalence between Dalbois formalism and Czech formalism. So if there are problems in one formalism and not problems in another formalism, then something is wrong with this statement. I don't think so. He left. He's conveniently gone.
There's certainly things that when you need to introduce that non-trivial sector, that's certainly, I think, is not that's fair to say.
You mean in the 0-2 way?
I mean, the free loop, if you want. I mean, when you have. So Costas pointed out to a problem that one of the. I think it's not a consensus yet.
But I think it's not a problem in the.
Minimal. He said there was a problem in minimal at 1 to 5 point,
but wasn't
in non-minimal.
So what I didn't explain is how you actually integrate things in the minimal formalism. And the way the way it's set up mathematically, it's usually the integrals are viewed as a counter integrals. So the problems which Costas was alluding to was that in his way of I don't want to say what he didn't say, but I think he wanted to interpret the fact that you have a non-compact space of pure spinners as some kind of zero modes or some residual symmetry, which he wanted to fix. And the way he fixed it, he actually pushed all his fields to sit at the origin, which is not there. If you define the integrals as counter integrals, you actually integrate around the origin, around this point, which is not there. And so I don't see how the problems could arise.
So in my paper, the paper that he used for people to look at the paper, I didn't understand these things that he was talking about. So there's certainly many things in the paper that are very sloppy that it's possible that if we understand better the things Nikita is talking about, it maybe except what Kostas was saying. That's what I suspect.
You see, people were... Well, Nathan was guided... In the first papers, he was guided by the analogy with superstring vertex operators, which involve delta functions of gammas a lot. And there, so gammas being the chiral fields, delta of gamma is something which you define using bosonization. But here, it's very tempting to think about everything geometrically, because fields have dimension zero. And if you just naively write an expression which involves delta of lambda, then you really have to explain what you mean by that, because here everything is set up in such a way that you use only rational expressions. These are some rational functions of lambda, which is very easy to take a counter integral of. And I think that should be the correct integration procedure. Yes, but he was taking the measure as the, he was integrating in the sense of some real slices, I think, not as a counter integral.
So does
Gamma
is Gamma.
Right. Well, if you introduce gamma bar, then you can actually use delta of gamma bar, but then it is equivalent to the counter integral in Laplace. So I don't want to make any strong statements, but I think that's the correct framework. It is a bit, it is not as simple as you could have think it would be, but certainly I think it's worth understanding this further. And I think if we treat this space properly, it will properly treat us in the end, so we will not get problems. I'm just trying to say that these difficulties with high order poles, which people talk about, they just have to do with the fact that you don't obey the rules. The rules here are that you have to work on U alpha, where you have a single, the things are allowed to vanish, but only to, but not lambda alpha is allowed to vanish. So when you pile up singularities, then you may end up at a point which is not there, which is not at this space. So there is some drawback in all this discussion, namely that I'm still just trying to make sense out of the sigma model, of the Wolschmidt sigma model, as it is given to me. I'm not trying to derive it as an gauge fixing of some system with signatures. Actually, when you look at this G0 expression, you look closely, you can recognize some bits of it as corresponding to the kappa symmetry transformations. So this is actually the kappa symmetry generator. So in a sense, when you look at the formula G is equal to Q commutator with G0, it looks like if you flip the roles of Q and G0, then it would look like this comes from the gauge fixing the kappa symmetry of the Green-Schwarz superstring. But you're not allowed to flip this. But of course, it is the Q which is the dimension zero supercharged with select physical states, and this is dimension two. But maybe thinking about this further can help to understand the origin of this formula. Anyway.
Is it the origin of Green-Schwarz formula?
No, the origin of pure spinor follows from the Green-Schwarz. So if you one day. Maybe there will be a way to derive it. Completely covariant way. But I'm trying to say that maybe the pure spinor formula is the way to quantize the Green-Schwarz superstring. So now I want to talk about the supranormal theory and its relation to Chern-Simons. Why do I want to talk about the relation to Chern-Simons? Well, it's obvious. As I argued, the pure spinner string has something to do with the D model, and in the open sector, the pure spinner gives us supranormals in 10 dimensions plus excited states, while the B model gives us the holomorphic Chern-Simons. So there must be some relation between the Chern-Simons theory and supranormals. So the question is it something new, or we already saw such a relation in the past? Okay. Well, Chern-Simons theories, especially the three-dimensional Chern-Simons theory, is an example of a topological theory of Schwartz type. So there are two kinds of topological theories. There are those which do not contain the space-time metric in Lagrangian. So these are the Schwartz type topological strings. And there are those which contain metric, but there is some nilpotent supercharge, such that the stress energy tensor is Q exact, and so the metric variation does not affect the correlators of Q closed observables. And so an example of such of the theory of second type is Donaldson theory. So more generally, if you take a supersymmetric Young Mills and then twist it, out may come a topological theory. So we know that in four dimensions, if you take n equals to theory, if you take pure n equals to supranormals, or if you take add some matter, in particular you can take n equals 4 supranormals, there is a way to twist it to get a topological theory. Can you go higher in dimensions? Question is, can you go higher in dimensions so that this program can continue this program? Well, is what's present went up to dimension 8, I think. But he did it in a non-covariant way. So the general law is that this is the last dimension where these things work nicely, in the sense that you don't need any extra structure than just the Riemannian, than just smooth structure of manifold to define a twist. Well, in fact, this is not quite true. The last dimension where you can topologically twist supranormals without breaking Lorentz invariance is 5. So this is the last covariant topologically twisted supranormal theory. In fact, you have to take the maximal supranormals, otherwise you don't get enough R symmetry. So the R symmetry group in 5 dimensions is SO5. And if you work in Euclidean space, the rotation group is also SO5. So this is the rotations. This is R symmetry. And so there is essentially a unique twist which you can do. Now you can embed the Lorentz group diagonally in the product of rotations and R symmetry, and that will give you a topological theory. What will it give you? Well, the fields of the five-dimensional supranormals, the maximal supranormals, are the gauge field. So it has 5 components. There are 5 scalars, and there are fermions. So the fermions are 16. There are 16 components. This is the same 16-component fermion which we see in 10 dimensions, in 4 dimensions, except that the spinner index is split into the spin 5 and spin 5. So after the twist, these 5 becomes also that 5. So the 5 scalars now become a one form. So you can combine them. And out of the gauge field and scalars, you just get a complexified gauge field. And then the fermions will split into a one form, a two form, and a scalar. You have one scalar, 5 one forms, and 10 two forms. I'm sure you saw this 1, 5, 10 somewhere else in the pure spinner discussions before. Okay. Now, in 4 dimensions, after the topological twist, the Lagrangian becomes essentially a sum of the topological term plus a QZ term. So all the non-trivial part of the gauge theory was hidden under the Q commutator. That was in 4 dimensions. In 5 dimensions, however, the situation is much more interesting. So there is a VRC charge. You've got a scalar fermion, and that comes with a scalar supercharge. So the supercharge will transform, let's say, A minus into the corresponding fermion one form. Will transform the scalar two form, sorry, the fermion two form, into the curvature of A plus. So the analog of the topological term, the term which did not depend on anything, here it turns out to be Chern-Simons kind of term. Except that, so it involves chi to A plus chi. And the rest is here. So this is Chern-Simons. So this is not the Chern-Simons gauge theory. You could think. I mean, normally you would consider something like ADA, which is not quadratic and so does not have a standard perturbation theory. No, you get the generalized Chern-Simons theory in the sense that you take the standard Lagrangian. Except that now your capital A, is not necessarily one form, it's an inhomogeneous form. So it has a zero form component, one form component, two form component, and so on. So in this language, So we can say that the maximal superannulus in 5 dimensions is just a gauged fixed version. So if I think about this Q as a gauge fixing Q of a Chern-Simons theory, except that it's a generalized Chern-Simons theory. Now, the Chern-Simons theory is the target space or string field theory for the A-type topological strings. And so this is precisely the kind of Chern-Simons which you will get if you studied the A model on the Lagrangian submanifold in the Calabi-Yau fivefold. But there is also a B model. And for the B model, one should get a holomorphic Chern-Simons theory. So, since I'm out of time, I'll just say that if you now go to 5 complex dimensions, to 10D, and now choose any complex structure. So let's say, so identify the 10-dimensional Euclidean space with C5 in any way, which is so choose the pure spinner and identify the R10 with C5. Then you can rewrite the n equals 1, n equals 10 to Brown Niels in a similar way. It's here, except that you will have to use a 5-0 form. So here chi will be now not a 2-form, but will be a 0-2-form. So A is 0-1. So this is a 0-5-form. And then you need the choice of a 5-0-form. And this choice is parameterized by the pure spin. So what it means is that for any pure spinner, for any choice of pure spinner around it, if you take a super annulus in 10 dimensions, it has 16 supercharges, but if you now consider a supercharge which sort of points in the direction of the pure spinner, that will be a nilpotent charge. Normally when you commute supercharges, you get a translation. But here, if lambda is a pure spinner, then you just get zero. And so now you can use this Q lambda as a topological supercharge. So if you rewrite the standard superannular section as a sum of it, Q closed and Q exact terms, you will get the holomorphic sign. So that means that this just confirms the point that for every value of lambda, the pure spinner superstring is like a B model. The beauty of it is that after you've combined all lambdas all together, and patch things together, you get the full physical spectrum. You get the full superannulus, not just its transaminal sector. So I sort of gave two separate talks. None of them was really finished or started, but I hope that I convinced you that this is something interesting and worth investigating further. Thank you very much.
Just one technical question. It's Chern-Simons in 5B. You normally, there is a Chern-Simons coming from the third Chern class.
That one? Yeah. It starts with ADADA. So that's
the relation between your general one down here and the normal combination of C3, which is what you're getting at there. That is what the one whose differential would be the third Chern class.
Yeah, so I don't know what the relation is actually, because here the physical field is still one form, while here it's essentially the Fermionic two form. So this comes from trace F squared, but where F is the sort of a super, it's a curvature of the super connection. Well, one could imagine that you can consider a family of Chern-Simons theories which come by descent from a generic characteristic class. So then this will be two representatives of, two families. So this comes from trace F squared, this comes from trace F cubed. The advantage of that one is that there are standard Feynman diagrams you can write there. For this theory, this was my first physics paper, how you define perturbation theory in the theory with cubic Chern-Simons. You can define formally interesting rules which involve, which has cubic vertices and things like that. But I don't know string theory which will lead to that. I don't know any standard procedure which gives rise to that theory. You see, you can think about, so if in three dimensions you think of chain assignments as of the way to define knot invariance or, you know, things like topological invariance, what would be the use of these generalized theories in from that point of view? So this theory, we argued with Fok, Rosli, and Silivanov, that you can consider generalized knots which are three manifolds, and for three such three manifolds, you have an invariant which is the triple linking number. So every pair intersects, but they intersect along the one-dimensional thing, which is can be linked then with the third one. And so this is formally this is calculated by the correlation functions of observables, which are the integrals of ordinary chain assignments three form over these three manifolds. But here I don't know. So here I think we're rather interested in some kind of scattering amplitudes and just global things. So I don't know what's the relation between this. What's the immediate relation between them?
What about this A cube term?
Yes. So see, if you expand, you get chi A plus chi. It comes from the cubic term. Yes.
So in principle, you may think of a full SO5 cross SO5 model, SO5 choices of topological twist. Why do you think it's unique, the 25-dimensional space of possible topological twists?
No, I think it's a rigid embedding. You cannot. There is no way to.
Equal four. You can choose a topological twist.
N equals four is different because once you reduce.
That's another example. I mean, when you think of n equal four as n equal two, okay, you can.
Embed. No. So n equals four theory has SO6 group of R symmetries. And there you embed SO4 into SO4 cross SO6. So there you really have, but no parameters. I mean, you have just several choices. There are no continuous parameters to do that. What happens with this so what does have parameters is that for some twists you get not one nilpotent charge, but maybe two. And then you can form linear combinations and call that charge the topological charge. So this is what happens if you, with this theory, actually. If you reduce it after the twist, if you reduce it down to four dimensions, you get second nilpotent charge, which comes from the... You see, here you have Q, and there is also a G field, which is one field. That's the translation. So when you reduce from 5 to 4, you have Q, and you have also G5. So they both are scalar charges in four dimensions. And... in fact, the theory which you get in four dimensions is the particular twist of n equals four, which was used by Kapustin and Witten precisely in discussing the Langlands correspondence. And so there, they actually studied the whole sphere. It is on a five manifold, which has to be embedded into some Calabi-Yau fivefold as a Lagrangian submanifold. Phi described the normal the fluctuations of the brain. And if the total space is symplectic, then the normal bundle is identified with cotangent bundle. And so this is why phis become one forms. In fact, maybe I should stop here. You can add things.